In this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking about how children in Illinois are doing. And we'll be doing that with two guests. Joining us by telephone, Jerry Sturmer. He is president of the organization called Voices for Illinois Children. And this organization has now for 12 years been issuing an annual report, taking a number of statistical indicators as a way of a sort of a snapshot of how children in Illinois are doing that particular year. They call this Kids Count, and it's the 12th report has recently been out. It came out, I think, in March. We have, I think, every year, or at least in many years, talked to Mr. Sturmer about the report, and it's gotten a lot of coverage in the news. We thought that we'd do that, and also here in the studio with us, Brenda Kester. She is a mentor coordinator for Champaign's Unit for Schools. And really the reason that she is here is that this year's report has a special emphasis, and it's, I think, a little bit different than the last Kids Count reports, at least many of the others that I have seen, in placing particular emphasis on education. And that is being something that's really important for the welfare, continued welfare of children in Illinois. So as we talk this morning, questions are welcome, as always, 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, and toll-free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers, and you are welcome at any point to call. Mr. Sturmer, hello.
Good morning, David. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks. And thanks very much for talking with us.
Well,
and
I'm happy to be here.
Here in studio with us, Brenda Kester, thank you very much. Am I pronouncing your last name
you
right?
You are.
Okay, very good. Thank you for being here. I wanted to ask Jerry Sturmer, because it does seem to me that this Kids Count report is a little different in the kind of emphasis that it places on schools. And I don't recall that having been quite so important before, or having your organization come right out and said so strongly just how important education is.
Well, you're right, David. We decided that we needed to take a closer look at the realities of education. And, you know, part of that comes from our many conversations with parents throughout the state, and especially parents of very young children. And the question that you ask is, you know, what are your hopes and your dreams for your children? And you find people want, of course, for their kids to have a good life, but it's so clear to all of us who are parents that a key to good life in contemporary society is success in school. So we titled our report this year, Learning, the Classroom and Beyond. And we took a look at some of the things that we know about school success. But other things we took a look at are beyond the classroom, because we know that kids do well when their families do well. And so we looked at both the classroom and beyond the classroom.
Yeah. You know, this ties in, it as it happens, with something that we're involved in here in our community. We have a little project going with our newspaper, the News Gazette, looking at the achievement gap, specifically trying to look at the issue of why it is that black kids are not doing as well as their peers in public schools. And in fact, we're doing a town hall meeting tonight, and we hope that there will be a lot of people who will come out and will talk about this. And we'll look at the fact that it is that on standardized tests that African-American kids don't do as well, that they're underrepresented in gifted education and overrepresented in special ed and in discipline. You know, those are the kinds of things they've gotten a lot of attention. And our newspaper here has done a really fine series over the last week summarizing that. But I guess the thing that I find myself thinking about as we look to public schools to deliver higher quality education for kids is that all of those things that affect the well-being of children, their ability to learn, that have nothing to do with what happens in the school. It's all that stuff, and you address a lot of it in your report, all those things that happen to the child before he or she gets to the front door of the school, and we can't really expect the schools to do anything about.
Well, I have a pie chart that's up on the wall in my office, and it's a very persuasive study that looks at school success, and it divides between three areas. One is 50% of the equation, according to this study, is what happens between the child and the parent and the child's and the community. So fully, by that study, one half of the reality of school success is beyond the classroom. And the other half is a combination of two things. One is the background and the preparation of the teachers, what they expect of the children, etc. And the smallest slice of the pie, 8% of school success is dependent on classroom size, the number of children per teacher. So a lot of times we think, well, you know, why don't we reduce class sizes, and we should, but we have to understand that there are other larger, much more powerful things that affect children and school success, and half of the equation is outside the school building itself.
Yeah, let me bring Brenda in the conversation.
Well, one of the things that we've talked about that I think is so neat about Champaign-Urbana is I call it the tale of two cities. We have one city, Champaign, that has a surplus budget for their school district, and we have the Urbana school district that is facing cuts again this year. And yet both school districts are failing a certain population of their students, and that is what you're looking at, African-American students, mm-hmm. and also students coming from a lower-income background. It's one of the things that I think Jerry's talking about, that there's a lot of things that affects kids and learning that happens outside of the school, and the school has only a certain amount of control over that. And so if we're really going to impact learning, we need to come together as a community and not just expect our schools to provide all the answers.
Well, and I think that also we probably need to be careful about talking about this exclusively as a problem of race that has something to do with race, because it's as much about poverty as is it about
exactly.
that. And that then once you sort of make that decision, make that realization, then you can start thinking about what as a community you think you might be able to do about that.
That's exactly right. In Champaign, we're working under a consent decree. So that's one of the reasons that you're talking more about how African-American children are doing in the classroom. But in Urbana, when they were presented with this issue, they did a study, and really the common denominator was the socioeconomic status of the children, and that those coming from a lower-income background were the ones that were struggling the most.
Let me turn to Jerry Sturmer, and let's go back and reference the Kids Count report. Can you talk give us a thumbnail sketch of what it is that's in that report? Because you have what you're looking at is indicators of child well-being in the state, and making comparisons. As I said, it's kind of a snapshot of where things are now, making comparisons with where they've been, and trying to ask about are things getting better, are things getting worse, and in what sort of respect. So overall,
yeah.
How are Illinois kids doing right now?
Well, interestingly enough, this year's Kids Count report has a mixed message. Some things are getting better, and I think we have to celebrate that, and some things are remaining in a frustrating stage. Let me kind of detail them out. There is better access to health care for a lot of kids in Illinois, and I think we have to recognize that in public policy we've expanded the kid care program. More parents are making sure that their kids get checkups and are involved in a medical home, so we're pleased to see more kids are covered. We see that fewer kids are reported as abused and neglected, and in fact, the overall number of children in the foster care system is down significantly. And I think Champaign County, in particular, has seen a continuing drop in the number of children in foster care, and we like to see that. Because we're assuming, and this may not be the case in every family, but we're assuming that kids are better off if their family is stable and doing well. We see a dramatic decline in the number of families on welfare. Now, again, that may be good in many cases and maybe a real problem in certain cases, but just for example, in Champaign County, between 1996 and 2003, we've had an 85% decline in families receiving welfare. So the number of children in such households has gone from 3,787 to 558. You would hope that in every one of those cases, it means that the parents have a job, that they're doing well, that they're out of poverty. I mean, clearly the more detailed analysis shows that there are many situations where the families are worse off because they're not receiving welfare. So we have to look at that, but here are the numbers. Where we see not significant change is in school outcomes. We still have close to 15% of kids do not graduate from high school. And there, the numbers of low-income kids are higher than middle-income kids. We don't see the kind of progress in reading scores, and we don't see the kind of investment in early childhood or preschool programs, preschool education programs, that would make a significant difference in the long run for these school outcome numbers. So you have a mixed bag in the 2004 Kids Count report.
One thing that struck me when you're looking at indicators of health had something to do with maternal health. And I was really struck by, first of all, I was struck by the fact that then one category where we've actually seen a slight increase is in the number of low birth weight babies. And also when you look at the statistics for moms who get some kind of prenatal care, as I remember it, something like 27% of African American women are not getting any prenatal care in their first trimester, and the figures for Hispanic moms a little bit better, but not much.
Mm-hmm.
So that we're still seeing a lot of apparently significant numbers of women who don't get that, and you have to wonder, does that contribute to kids who are born less healthy maybe than they should be, that then translates into their ability to learn?
Well, the whole experience of birth has a big impact, absolutely. I am not quite as alarmed about the change in low birth weight babies, because with increased technology, we are actually able to save more babies who years back would have been born prematurely and not made it at all. So that we have an increase in low birth weight babies is partially due to a lack of prenatal care or poor nutrition, and partially due to increased technology and medical skill and science. So it's kind of a mixed. But what is so frustrating is that we still have ahead of us a very significant education job to make sure that all pregnant women have prenatal care in the first trimester, and that we give every child in Illinois the best possible start in life. So we have a lot of work to do in that arena.
Yeah. Let me introduce real quick again our guests. Joining us on telephone is Jerry Sturmer. He's president of Voices for Illinois Children, an organization that for now 12 years has been putting out an annual report that they called Kids Count, looking at various statistical indicators of how Illinois children are doing. The report is available, and if you have internet access, you can go to their website. That's Voices for Kids, and the four is the numeral four, voicesforkids.org. And you can look at the report there. And also here in the studio with me is Brenda Kester. She's mentor coordinator with Champaign's Unit for Schools. Questions welcome, 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. I sort of jumped in there after Jerry gave his thumbnail sketch, and you were noting down a couple of things. Do you want to follow up on some of the things that he said?
Sure. One of the things that I've been involved with Voices for a number of years, and one of the exciting things they've done is started leadership committees around different communities in the state, and Champaign-Urbana is one of them. I'm a co-chair with Ann Slichter, and one of the exciting things that's happened here in Champaign is we've joined forces with Project 18 and with the United Way Success by Six Board to come together and really become a collaborative group that's looking at issues facing children. It's exciting. Right now, we're still in the formulation stages of what this is going to look like. And if anyone is interested in participating, they could certainly call and get information on how to do that. One of the things that we're certainly looking at is taking the Kids Count report and saying, how does it affect Champaign County? And what are the things that we want to look at? One of the things, when Jerry was talking about families on welfare, one of the things that we see in the school system is that we're having an increased number of students who qualify for free and reduced lunch, which is an indicator of child poverty, certainly of hunger issues. And it's one of those things where, as we're seeing a larger population in private schools, the public schools are starting to get a higher percentage of lower-income children. And it's an alarming trend, and it's one that we're really wanting to take a look at.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me turn back to Jerry Sturmer here, because as we talked about at the beginning, you made the decision to really emphasize education and the importance of education, the institution of public education, here in your report. And I think you've even come out publicly and made some statements about school funding, something that as long as I can remember here in the state of Illinois, at least going back 20 years, it's been one of those things that's been on the table. Legislators have talked about it. I've had many candidates in here, and I've asked them about that. And I said, oh, yes, we really need to do something about this. But it's something that in Springfield has not gone anywhere. People have talked about taking the emphasis off the property tax and doing something to equalize the kind of resources that districts have to put behind their kids, because some districts have lots of money and some districts don't. And nothing, essentially nothing, has happened. Do you think that it's here sometime in the near future, it's any more likely that the legislature might actually do something about school funding?
Well, it's certainly the hope of child advocates around the state of Illinois that we scrap our 19th century state revenue system and get us a little bit closer to the 21st century here. I mean, our whole plan to fund schools is designed a long time ago. In, you mentioned 20 years. I'd look back about 34 years ago when we did the 1970 Constitution revision, and even there, the concept was that the state should have the primary responsibility for funding public education, with local taxes being in a secondary position. We've not achieved that aspiration of the Constitution. During these 34 years since that Constitution was ratified, we've seen nothing but an erosion of the state's position and a over-reliance on property tax, to the point where Illinois now has the largest disparity between the property-wealthy districts and the property-poor districts. I note in the publication that we're talking about, Illinois Kids Count, that the highest-spending elementary district in Illinois has over $18,000 per student per year, and the lowest spending district is down less than $4,500 per student. That disparity earns us the lowest ranking among every state in the country in a recent report by the Education Trust, a national think tank out of Washington, D.C. In every indicator, and these kind of statistics are well known to legislators, but they are somehow or other paralyzed when it comes to fixing school funding. Because we've developed such a deep hole that the disparity between districts is so dramatic, the fix now appears to be too difficult for the political calculations of members of the General Assembly. That having been said, a number of groups, including the Illinois Farm Bureau, Voices for Illinois Children, the Illinois Education Association, and others, have formed a new statewide alliance, a new coalition, called A Plus Illinois. A Plus Illinois is bound and determined to keep up the public pressure until we get a comprehensive overhaul of state school revenue system. We've got to do this for our kids. We've got to do it for our own future. Now is the time. I don't see it happening this spring in the Illinois General Assembly. Many people say you're pushing a rock up a very steep hill, and why keep beating yourself up? And I say that most of us who call ourselves child advocates, and there are tens of thousands of us, we look ourselves in the mirror each morning and we say we have a moral, a sacred obligation to our kids to keep up this discussion until we get the job done. And this may be the most difficult challenge we've ever faced, but it's certainly one that we have to solve.
I want to make sure we talk a little bit about the mentoring program and what that's about and why it is important. And because I think it goes to this idea that people also need to feel that they have a stake in the success of kids in school. If they don't succeed, the community doesn't succeed. That's pretty obvious. Although I don't know how we sort of give a lip service to that notion. I'm not sure whether we're really backing it up with much action. Tell me about the mentoring program.
The mentoring program is one of the ways that we engage the community with our local schools. As Jerry talked about, parental involvement in a student's school career is really paramount to them being successful. We've also found that there are other individuals that can also help support that effort. One of the things that we see are students who are dropping out, not necessarily physically from school, but mentally, emotionally. They're not connecting with their peers. They're not living up to their potential. And to address this situation, the communities of Champaign-Urbana, the University of Illinois, and a number of other entities came together and said, what can we do about this? They developed something called the CU One-to-One Mentoring Program that will be 10 years old next fall. And what the program does is it takes community adults and matches them one-on-one with a student who's been selected at risk for engaging in inappropriate behaviors, dropping out of school, any number of things. And they meet with that student 1 hour a week at the school during the school day. It's a relationship building program that happens over time. And what's amazing is the power of an hour is what we call it, because it's something that repeatedly week after week we start seeing there's real benefits to students. We ask individuals to commit to a year. And then tell them right up front at the end of that year, we're going to ask you for another, in the hopes that they'll continue and follow that student through to graduation. Next week is our annual mentor banquet, where we acknowledge students who have made it and graduated from high school. And repeatedly they say that if it wasn't for their mentor, they wouldn't have stuck with it. Mm-hmm. So it's a really exciting program to reach students who we have not been able to reach. Many times these are students who didn't get access to pre-K programs, who didn't start school on the right foot, who, for whatever reason, kind of are falling through the cracks. Hmm.
You think, Jerry, you think that programs like this can make a difference?
The mentoring programs that we've seen studied across the country make a gigantic difference. And I cannot think of a more significant contribution for community leaders to make than doing this, the organizing of the mentoring program that Brenda talked about. I love the phrase, the power of an hour, and I love the reality that students are reporting that without the mentor, they might not have made it.
We have a caller to bring in, and other people who are listening are certainly welcome with questions and comments here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Here's caller in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Yeah, I just have a short question. I happened to hear over the weekend that Tennessee passed a school funding per pupil equalization law, and that they're going to, spend the same amount in all school districts. And I know part of it has to do with getting off property tax, et cetera. But I was just wondering if your guests knew of other successful equalization laws being passed anywhere, and I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay. I don't know, Jerry Sturmer, can you comment on that?
Well, absolutely. The question is about, you know, what's going on in the rest of the country, and literally all over the country we're finding either legislators or judicial systems intervening to try to strike the right balance of how should we distribute the school finances. In Illinois, a number of years back, there was an effort by school superintendents to, in effect, sue the state on the question of equality. Isn't it a constitutional right of children to have something of an equal education, and shouldn't the funding available be equal in every school district? Our campaign, the A-plus Illinois campaign, recognizes that the judiciary of the Illinois Supreme Court took a pass. They said that is not the role of the judiciary in Illinois. Rather, the legislature needs to make this decision. And as the previously we mentioned on the show, we've gone for at least 34 years with the legislature making no significant decision about equalizing school funding. The A-plus Illinois campaign recognizes that the best approach is probably not to have school funding absolutely equal because of the role of local decision-making, so that if we can get the per-pupil foundation level up to what most researchers tell us in Illinois ought to be at least $5,800, then it should be up to local school districts to say, okay, we want to have a local referendum to have an add-on of X or Y or Z. So if you leave local school districts and local property tax in the equation, we'll never really have totally equal, but we ought to have at least a foundation level that we could all look at one another in the eye and say, this is acceptable, this is the kind of starting place that every student should be. So it needs to be some combination of an equal foundation with some possible add-ons according to the local school districts.
Okay, let's go. We have somebody calling from a cell phone. Let's get to them on our line 4. Hello.
Yes, this is Fred Lloyd. I really live at Covington, but I'm listening to your program on the road. I watched Tony Brown's Journal yesterday. They were talking about the fact that 50% of the young black men in New York City do not have a high school education. Therefore, they're not employable. The kinds of jobs that were unskilled that they were employed in the past are no longer there. Therefore, they can't support families. The Latino group is even at that level or greater in level of graduation from high school. And as we look down the road, this means somebody has to support the offspring. What I'm looking at is the same situation I see in Indiana, where we talk about parental involvement in education. Most of that comes from the educated parents, those that do not feel education is as important for their children are obviously involved in other activities when they could be involved with school activities. And another emphasis that was placed in that program was that we cannot let people believe that sports are a lifetime employment. And the emphasis on sports today, and even the schools that I'm associated with, my wife's a first grade teacher, the emphasis on sports is overemphasized. We need more on reading. We need more on math education. We need more mentoring. And I think the mentoring program certainly would be a success in our school. The problem is finding people who will give the time. I'll hang up and listen to what you have to say.
Okay. Certainly, the caller raises a number of very good points. You want to pick up on it? Brenda, you want to pick up on some of it?
I would. I liked some of the things that the caller highlighted. One of the things that both Champaign and Urbana school districts have done is hired a parent involvement specialist. And that person is charge is to get parents more involved with their students' education. I think one of the things that people are easy to do is to say that parents who are not involved are involved because they don't want to be. And that's not always what we find. We find that there are a number of parents who are struggling to make ends meet. These are people who are working 2 and 3 jobs each, and the available time for them to come in isn't as great. There are also parents who may have had a very negative experience at school themselves and are reluctant to come in. So one of the things that we need to do as school districts is to create an environment that is not only welcoming, but encouraging to get parents and other community members involved and engaged in educating what is our future.
Maybe I would ask Jerry Sturmey, could you say something about dropout rates in the state of Illinois?
Well, we're looking at astonishing numbers, as many as 10% of each age group between 16 and 19 have not completed high school. So, as the caller says, if you're a person who hasn't completed high school in America today, your chances of competing very successfully in the job market are not nearly as good as they were 50 years ago. So what do we do about dropout rates? The most powerful studies show that the community should be concerned about potential dropouts at the time in which the children are ages birth to 5. It seems a little counterintuitive, but the research is quite clear that the patterns of successful learning are really set during the earliest years of a child's life. And as Brenda says, it's a partnership between the community and the parents. Parents have, of course, the primary role in the lives of children. And we in the community need to find ways to engage and support parents from the time that the children are born, in fact, in the prenatal stage of life. So engaging parents, giving parents the kinds of supports that enable them to facilitate the pre-literacy skills of their children is the thing that pays off the most. The preschool learning programs, the quality time that children and parents spend in those earliest years of life make the biggest difference in getting that dropout rate down.
Let's talk with someone else. Champaign caller, line 2. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure for me. Actually, I called mainly with a thank you for having the program and for the two speakers for emphasizing that it is, in fact, a much bigger picture than the focus on schools and education. I think many people don't recognize that, you know, there's certainly lots of blame that can be passed around, but it's not an issue of blame, but an issue of the community working together. And I particularly appreciate, from a perspective of a maternity nurse, the focus that it goes back way beyond even children starting school and health and parental behaviors before they even get pregnant, things like that. Anyway, so it's just a thank you for doing the program and for the program that's going on tonight.
All right. Well, very good. I appreciate the call. Other people, if you have questions, comments, you're certainly welcome to call 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Having made the point that what happens outside of the classroom is very important, and going back to Jerry Sturmer, you're earlier talking about the pie chart that's up on the wall in your office that looks at all of those things that contribute to success in school, and half are things that are beyond the classroom. Let me, though, I'm interested in having you focus a little bit on the classroom. Certainly over the last, gosh, I don't know how long now, people have been talking about what could be done to improve public education. One of the things that people often look at is in fact, class size. And you said you think, well, that's probably not sure that's important, but that's not a big piece of the school pie, that slice of the pie. It's fairly small. So I guess I wonder what do you have some thoughts about what happens in the classroom and what can happen to improve the experience that kids have in the classroom, particularly minority kids?
Well, I trust that people won't be surprised to hear me say that the support that we provide to teachers is the biggest factor in school success in the classroom itself. We in society have got to figure out that we are entrusting our children to teachers, and we need to make sure that we keep good teachers and that we attract good teachers, and that when we have teachers, they have every opportunity, first of all, to be mentored themselves and to be able to keep up their skills, etc. And those things seem simple, and I imagine that most listeners would say, well, isn't that just part of the deal? Well, it's not part of the deal if we keep losing good teachers. And there are school districts in Illinois where they have to replace one out of four teachers every year because new teachers come, they realize this is a tough go, they don't feel supported, they don't have what they need, and they move on to something else. We've got to kind of turn that around so that this becomes a stable and well-respected profession. You know, we do a lot of polling to get a sense of how Illinoisans think about children. And Illinoisans have a very high regard for teachers, and yet teachers feel very frustrated that they're not adequately supported. And when we have these disparities in school funding, what we find is teachers are attracted to the districts that can pay a more substantial salary to teachers, and school districts that have less ability in their finances lose teachers and have a higher turnover rate. So we've got to look, number one, at how we're supporting teachers.
Oh, I would definitely agree with that. As the daughter of two school teachers, I can guarantee I thought that they needed to be paid much more when I was a teenager. I still do think that Jerry's right. Beyond just remuneration, there are extra things, and when a school district isn't funded as well, there aren't supplies for a classroom that many teachers go out and then buy themselves. The problems that you get in your classroom when you have a larger proportion of students who are not ready to learn or who are dealing with a lot of issues outside of the classroom, that makes it more difficult to teach. I know one of the other things that we've been looking at as a community, and they've highlighted in this Bridging the Gap, is attracting minority teachers. The education college here has a lessening number of minority students and that want to become teachers. And so how are we going to bump those numbers up and do a better job of attracting and retaining those minorities?
We've got another person here who's calling in on the cell phone, so we will not make them wait. We'll go there, line one. Hello.
Hello, I'm calling. I'm an African-American parent who had children in public schools. And my concern was, based on my experience, especially with my two boys, was that the expectation level for them from a predominantly white faculty, especially white females, was very low, and they were very unidimensional in how they viewed my sons as basically athletes, and they encouraged them to try to aspire to be football players and basketball players and not engineers, scientists, lawyers, and doctors. And my ex-wife and I had to bring this to their attention. I think what we need to think about here in terms of the teaching faculty at these schools is that they should expect more of minority students, especially African-American male students. What do you think about that?
Well, Jerry Sturmer, what do you think about that?
I want to say that this caller is right on target, that this is one of the most significant questions that we have in society today. Most of us look to the adults around us as to, well, what do you expect? Do you expect me to do the chores? Do you expect me to do my homework? Do you expect me to aspire to be a leader? And we respond based on those expectations and the belief that we can be what we want to dream to be. And I think the question is so clearly put by the caller. If if society in the person of our teachers comes up with some classic mental stereotypes of how well kids are going to do, those expectations are set at the wrong level, and the kids fall off the radar screen. I once remember a principal telling me that he could tell as early as the first or second grade who was going to make it and who wasn't going to make it. And for those kids who he thought weren't going to make it, I can almost guarantee you that this caller has framed up the question of exactly those kids' experiences. The teachers and the faculty, somehow or other, even if they didn't believe it themselves, were not expecting those kids to do well. So we've got to figure this one out and shake things up in a very significant way. And this is, of course, not something that we can wave a magic wand or just solve the school funding crisis and see happen. We've got to put this question on the table, realize it, talk about it, understand it, and get to it directly.
I think that I see in both our school districts here that we're very much engaged in that question and looking at it. I don't know if either school district has found the magic bullet or gotten all the answers, but I do know that as a community, I feel we are looking at that issue and saying, what are we doing and how can we do better?
All right. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for the call. We have a caller in Belgium over by Danville, line number 4. Hello.
Hello. I'd like to address a newer problem that's happening, at least here in this part of Illinois, and it may be happening all over the United States. Larger city, Chicago, has decided to reduce the amount of public housing and stuff in Chicago, and they've kind of encourage folks to move downstate into other areas, which that's fine. I have no problems with that. But what it does is it places an enormous burden on the school system because it brings children, a lot of children with it, and no funding. Because a lot of times these people are going into public housing, which they don't actually contribute to the education of their children when it comes to tax dollars. And it produces a great deal of burden on these school districts where they happen to come into. Has this problem existed elsewhere in the United States, or is this just pretty much a Illinois phenomenon?
Well, Jerry, can you say something about that?
Certainly, it's happening in many communities across the country where the diversity of income and race in school districts is dramatically changing. On the question of diversity, we found in our report that the largest number of change that we saw in ethnic groups among children is the dramatic rise and increase in Hispanic children. But the caller raises a very interesting problem that the legislature has not addressed, and that is when school districts have increased challenges, either numerical challenges, such as we see in the Plainfield School District, which is growing by over 1,000 new students a year, and that would be an increase of 3 new school buildings in many cases per year in one single district, or the increase that the caller is talking about where you have a larger number of low-income children with more special needs. The finance formula doesn't account for this, and we've got to shake this thing up. We've got to change the poverty formula in a significant way, and we have to be able to support districts that have huge increases either in numbers or in challenges.
Thank you very much, sir.
All right. We have about 5 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. If you have questions, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. I think one of the things that we certainly know is that all children benefit from being able to be in, if they have to be in daycare, to be in a quality daycare setting. And if possible, we're not talking about something that just is providing good custodial care, but also has some kind of educational component. But I think we also know that the demand exceeds the supply, and that for some families it may be a matter of their resources, that they could be in a high-quality daycare if they had the money to pay for it, and not everybody does. What can we say about access to early childhood education, and whether if there was greater access, then we could also see that reflected in long-term performance by kids?
Well, the research is very, very clear that children in exactly the same sort of socioeconomic circumstances, if one goes to a quality early learning program and one doesn't, down the road, the differences are marked and clear. So the smartest thing that we can do as a society, if we want to improve learning outcomes for young people, is to invest in quality, not just invest in early learning programs, but quality early learning programs. Happily, the legislature and Governor Blagojevich have appointed an early learning council to, if you will, peel back the layers of the early learning onion, to figure out a way in which parents can continue to have options of all-day programs, programs that are in homes or centers or in schools or in Head Start. The Early Learning Council is determined to improve our current system and figure out a way so that all children whose parents want to enroll them in good programming have good program options. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be inexpensive. But we have to figure out how to make sure that every child is ready for school by the time they enter kindergarten. And it may take us 5 or 10 years. If we put our minds to it, I think we can and should do that.
We're trying to get one more caller in Indiana, line 4. Hello.
Yeah, thank you. Quickie. What I've noticed is that, where I'm in Indiana, and the Head Start program started some time ago, of course, what I noticed over the years is that once the program starts, there's a lot of hullabaloo about it, and everybody pushes it. Then after that, our group is controlled by what's called Area 5, and there's various areas throughout the state to get monies from the state. They move on to something else that's, you know, sexier or hotter or whatever, and the program basically stays the same in terms of funds. Sometimes they even get less. I've noticed over some times of the years and stuff. And so the number of children they can bring in is certainly limited. And there seems to be no attempt by our administration, Democratic or Republican, open up the gates a little more. Thank you.
Okay.
I think one of the exciting things that's happening in Champaign is that the United Way has brought a group of people together under the auspices of Success by Six. These are community leaders, both business, the University of Illinois, that have said exactly what Jerry has said, that it is the most important thing that we can do as a community to become a successful community and to provide better outcomes for our children.
Well, we're just about the point here. We are going to have to stop. I want to, before we go, if people are interested in mentoring and might like to get involved in this, what could they do?
They can call me at 351-3722. They can also check out our website, which is www.cu121. That's numeral1.org. And we'd be happy to tell them more about the program.
Okay. And I know also if people are interested in looking at the Kids Count 2004 report, they can go to the website of Voices for Illinois Children, and that's www.voicesforkids, and the four there is the numeral for voicesforkids.org. Jerry Sturmer from Voices for Illinois Children, thank you very much for talking with us.
Appreciate being part of the program.
And Brenda Kester, mentor coordinator for Champaign Unified Schools. Thank you.
Thank you.
And before we go, I do again want to issue an invitation to anybody who is interested to attend the live town hall meeting that we are co-sponsoring with the News Gazette. That's tonight at 7:30 at Stratton Elementary School in Champaign. We hope to have a big group of parents and teachers and students and administrators and anybody who is interested in attending to talk about this issue of the educational achievement gap and how we can address that. For more information, you can go to the website, which is cutownhall.org. And then, of course, we'll be here broadcasting it on WILO Radio at 7:30. So if you don't get a chance to attend, if you can't attend, you can hear it. And then we're also recording it for television. So at the end of the week on Friday night, it will be on WILO TV. But we'd certainly invite anybody who's interested to come by and to take part in it. The more people, the better.